I interjected angrily as an all-too-familiar expression of resignation crossed Aldwin's face at Veronia's statement. Because I, for one, am starting to lose my patience.
That includes us, too,
Lazarus added from his side of the table, his voice matching mine as he twisted in his seat to look at the noble beside him.
What more have you been hiding from us?
Nothing more than you needed to know to play your part, Stanton replied, turning his head towards Lazarus and his companions. And you've done well enough, all things considered.
What is that?
Lazarus began to ask before Stanton cut him off, frustration finally entering the noble's voice.
Enough!
He announced sharply, raising his hand in the air to forestall any more questions.
Allow me to explain what I must first. Then you can all ask the questions that are no doubt burning in your minds. These interruptions are doing nothing but wasting our time.
Closing my mouth at my own question, I pushed down on the confusion and anger that was coursing through my mind, trying to calm myself as Stanton began to speak.
As you all know, when I first arrived, I announced myself as a House Daenerys representative, here to check on our investment and bring news from Iberia, a role that perfectly fits everyone's expectations of Lord Adrian Stanton's abilities,
the man began to explain.
But what few people know is that the original bearer of that name has been dead for over 20 years now, killed in a meaningless skirmish during the war.
The man that we had just known as Stanton regarded us for a moment, letting his revelations sink in as our mouths dropped open in shock.
Instead of letting his name die, House Daenerys chose to keep it alive and allowed me the opportunity to cultivate it into a personality suitable to pass unnoticed among high society, enabling me to conduct house business that would best not be made public, if you understand my meaning.
So, let me get this straight, Constantine said slowly, shaking his head from side to side. All this time, you've just been pretending to act like a pompous dick? Like some sort of act?
That is an exceptionally crude way to describe that persona, yet not entirely inaccurate,
Stanton replied, inclining his head towards the rogue in acknowledgement.
People choose to see what they wish to see, and very few decide it worth the energy to look past an abrasive man such as Adrian Stanton.
The man paused, letting a small smile creep across his face.
Yourselves included.
After all these years, you've been a damned house spy?
Aldwin accused, his voice sounding completely disgusted as he glared at the masquerading noble.
I can't believe I was so blind. I would have never let you within the same room as the prince had I known. Though it truly doesn't surprise me to learn that Amelia has use for your kind.
As you no doubt know, Frederick, we prefer to be referred to as agents in polite company.
Stanton corrected, shifting his gaze towards the barn.
And I wouldn't have been much of one if I allowed you to find out what I was in the few chance meetings we had.
A clever name hides nothing, Stanton,
Aldwin said, emphasizing the man's stolen name.
I am no fool. I know all too well what your kind is used for, and an inkling of all of the blood that has been shed in shadows over the years.
Then you should be all too happy that the Queen has directed me to Aldford on your behalf,
the man replied,
because we have reason to believe that the other houses have sent some of their agents to infiltrate Aldford, assuming, of course, that they hadn't already placed some in the original group of settlers.
Wait, I interrupted, still trying to wrap my mind around the unexpected turn this meeting had taken. You're telling us now that we could have spies in the town?
We believe there is a very strong chance,
Stanton admitted.
Nearly a month ago, we lost sight of a handful of known agents belonging to House Amberwayne and House Phineas, last seen leaving Coldscar in a westbound direction. Furthermore, on our journey here, I made one House Wybrant agent as well, though, fortuitously perhaps, he fell prey to the bandits during the raid. Those other agents never made it here,
Sierra said, casting a hard glance at Stanton as she spoke.
You and the other settlers are the first arrivals to Aldford in weeks. Either they went somewhere else, or they ran into the bandits ahead of you and were killed.
Or perhaps they organized the bandits in the first place, attempting to cut Aldford off from Iberia,
Stanton countered, drawing surprised stares from everyone at the table.
They would do that? Halcyon asked in a sharp tone. The settlers are your own people. What could they possibly gain from killing your own countrymen?
To isolate us, I said, looking at the bandits we had killed in a new light. I had assumed that they had set up shop near Aldford, hoping to catch travelers unaware as they either left the town or were about to arrive, being motivated by greed. But if what Stanton is saying is true, and greed wasn't the only factor? If being the key word.
I will remind you all of this is conjecture at best,
Stanton continued to explain before my voice cut him off. How do yours and Veronia's plan to depose Aldwyn and annex Aldford fit into this? I asked, seeing everyone's head snap towards me as the words left my mouth, and then back towards Stanton after I finished. Lazarus's eyes were especially wide when he looked at me, but the angry expression on his face told me that he wanted to know just as much as I did. Because right now that's a more pressing concern than wherever these agents may be. Of course, assuming there are any agents in the first place. Despite having everyone's eyes on him, Stanton appeared completely unfazed by my statement, giving me a slow nod as he clasped his hands in front of him.
Very well. I suppose we can jump ahead to there if you are so impatient for me to explain my motivations,
Stanton said with a slight sigh of frustration.
The plan to annex Aldford was my attempt to get any agents within Aldford to reveal themselves, namely by giving them an avenue to make contact with Lazarus or his companions. I had hoped to use their dissatisfaction with being pressed into my service as being a motivator. Unfortunately, no doubt due to your rather dramatic rescue of the caravan from the bandits, he chose to make contact with your guild. Something I hadn't anticipated when I'd first laid the groundwork for the plan, nor something that I could easily counter once it was in motion.
You knew I was listening? Lazarus asked in disbelief. You set all of this up just to see who we'd contact?
Of course, Stanton stated. In fact, I went through great pains to ensure that you would be. I have also been meaning to tell you that you aren't as stealthy as you think you are. How you even managed to survive as a thief is beyond me.
God damn you, Stanton! Lazarus snarled from his seat. All we've been trying to do is keep you from getting killed, while you play your games and manipulate everyone around you.
Again, that is my job. And I won't apologize for using you as the blunt tools that you are,
the agent replied, annoyance finally entering his voice.
And while I appreciate the sentiment of your protection, I assure you I am quite capable of taking care of myself.
This is fucking bullshit!
I exclaimed as I saw Lazarus open his mouth to yell at Stanton, the frustration around the table starting to build to unbearable levels.
I can't believe a thing that you're saying anymore, Stanton! Do you have a shred of proof to back up any of this?
Of course I do,
Stanton answered, his hand reaching to his robe and pulling free a folded length of paper with a heavy wax seal, offering it to Aldwyn.
We didn't know under what circumstances I may have had to reveal myself to Frederick, and as such, the Queen prepared a letter of introduction for me.
Oh, come the fuck on, Constantine exclaimed from my side. You expect us to fall for that? Letters can be easily forged.
Not one from the Queen, Stanton said idly. She has sealed it with magic, and Frederick is the only one here that can open it. Should anyone other than him break the seal on it, the letter will simply go up in flames.
I left all this behind for a reason, Adrian,
Aldwyn growled, clearly familiar with the type of protections that Stanton was talking about, as he reached to snatch the letter roughly from the agent's hand.
I wanted to be free of Iberian politics for once in my life, to finally be away from the constant secrets and intrigues that plague the kingdom.
I'm sorry, Frederick, but that is simply just not possible,
he replied, shaking his head.
Ignore it at your own peril. But Iberia's politics have begun reaching out to Oldford, and refusing to play the game is no different to conceding.
Alduin didn't reply as he turned the letter over in his hand, then broke the wax seal with one smooth motion of his finger. No sooner was the seal broken did a tiny spark of magic flash in the air, vanishing as quickly as it appeared. Reading the letter intently, Alduin's face turned into a scowl as his eyes darted from line to line, shifting into anger and finally outright surprise.
"The gods must laugh and laugh as they witness my life," he said with resignation, passing the letter on to Sierra and Halcyon. "There is no doubt that this letter is from her."
It didn't take long for my friends to finish reading the letter before sliding it down the table towards me, leaving me staring down at a page with long and flowing handwriting.
"To Sir Frederick Aldwyn, from the hand of the Dowager Queen and Matriarch of House Daenerys. Frederick, if you are reading this letter, then chances are that either you or my agent have irrevocably screwed something up, and are in need of my words to either verify his mission or to keep you from killing him, perhaps both. In either case, I am disappointed in the both of you. I had hoped that this mission would proceed with a minimal amount of exposure, but unfortunately I must assume my agent had good cause to reveal himself. To that effect, I will reiterate what he should have told you. We believe that the other houses have taken notice of Oldford, either having detected the presence of the ley line themselves and seek to claim it, or have finally decided to pursue a personal vendetta against you. However, with the political situation of Iberia having become what it is, I cannot afford to publicly rebuke them, or continue to retain any formal ties with Oldford, or with you. I am certain you rejoice at this prospect as much as I do. To that effect, I am hereby absolving you of any debts you may owe to my house, with the understanding that you will follow through with the mission that my agent brought to you in regard to the ley line. Iberia needs it restored if we are to put up a good show against the Ascendancy. As a parting gift and insurance against any foolishness on your part, I am assigning you my agent for a term not to exceed 6 months before you are to send him back to Iberia, war or not. He should be able to assist you in ensuring that your settlement is free of any of the other house's agents, while providing training on how to avoid any future political entanglements. Do with it what you will, Frederick. But it is my advice that you find yourself powerful allies to surround yourself with, perhaps a legion or two of adventurers if you can find enough of suitable temperament. Regardless, to say, Iberia will not be coming to your aid should something befall your settlement. It is my sincere wish that we never meet again, in this life or the next, though I doubt the gods will be gracious enough to honor that request. Yours truly, Matriarch Amelia Daenerys.
Satisfied?
Stanton asked me as I finished reading the letter and passed it over to Constantine. The Queen has a rather particular way with words, I said slowly, still trying to process what I just read and the future implications that it would have for Oldford. But I still don't understand why the hell you went through all this trouble. You should have told us earlier.
As I said before, I didn't trust you earlier.
Stanton replied,
until I was sure that you yourselves hadn't been suborned by one of the other houses. I couldn't take the chance. It wasn't until you banned us from accessing the runes that I was confident you were working alone, and that your loyalty lay exclusively with Oldford. Had you been working with another house, you would have likely continued to keep us close to determine the fullest extent of what I knew, then likely attempted to arrange an accident somewhere in the runes.
"Is that what you would have done?" Constantine asked, having finished reading the Queen's letter.
"No,"
Stanton replied, shaking his head at the rogue.
"Accidents like that are hard to prove. I would have done it during the chaos of a bandit raid, with no one else the wiser."
Chapter 24.
Rawr! I slammed Razor into the head of the giant beetle before me, the burning anger behind my attack cracking the tough chitin that comprised the creature's face.
Dodging around a pair of snapping mandibles, I hefted Razor back again in the air and brought it down onto the creature's head a second time, a loud crunch sounding over the plains as the weakened chitin finally gave way in a spray of ichor. Working itself up into a frenzy from the pain, the creature launched its large bulk forward to knock me off my feet, only to sweep through the empty space where I'd just been standing. I had long since become familiar with these creatures' tactics, and fighting them had become a mechanical series of moves and countermoves, leaving me with all too much time to dwell on anger and frustration that I was carrying. I caught a clawed leg on Razor's edge, gritting my teeth as the anger within bubbled to the surface, causing me to shove hard against the creature's limb. My anger-driven sword easily slicing straight through the chitinous leg. At the same moment, a burning dagger appeared in my free hand. Stepping past the beetle's now shortened guard as it spun to face me, I slammed the dagger into the creature's head, aiming for the very spot that I had weakened with my earlier blows. Already cracked and bleeding, the beetle's natural armor was no match for my attack, as the flaming dagger pierced straight through its exoskeleton and turned its brain to ash. Hesitating, the creature's mandibles twitched as it slowly registered what had just happened, its body then falling to the ground with a heavy crash. "You have slain a giant plains beetle. You have gained experience. Congratulations, you have reached level 14. The prospect of having finally gained a new level did nothing to soothe my foul mood, as I shook the blood off Razor's edge and looked around the battlefield for any more beetles in my immediate vicinity, hoping that there was still something to take my anger out on. My eyes scanned over the fallen corpses of five other beetles, already barely remembering fighting them.
"That appears to be all of them."
Amaranth's wary tone filtered through my mind, unable to hide his worry at my mental state.
"The woman appears to be reasonably unharmed as well."
I mentally grunted back at Amaranth as my eyes landed on the bald adventurer that we had seen fleeing from the swarm of beetles a few minutes ago, looking only slightly worse for wear. I couldn't recall even seeing her during the battle after Amaranth and I had charged into the beetles, though judging by the ichor streaming from the mace she was holding, she hadn't been idle. "Thanks," she breathed heavily, glancing between us as the bodies began to dissipate. "There was no way I could have survived that. Hey, you're that guild leader guy from Oldford, aren't you? I've seen you before in town." "No problem, and yeah, that's me," I replied, no longer surprised that I was noticeable enough for people to recognize. "Do you have a group out here? You look a bit lost, and these plains aren't safe enough to travel alone."
"Not all who wander are lost," the adventurer said philosophically, causing me to look back toward her with a blank expression. "But I sure am."
"By yourself?" I asked for a second time.
"Yeah,"
she admitted with a deep sigh.
"And I really have no idea where Alfred is anymore."
"Well, you're pretty far away from it," I said, motioning towards the southeast. "How long exactly have you been wandering out here?"
Well,
the woman replied hesitantly, clearly embarrassed.
"Since Wednesday? I didn't think I went that far, but when I started to head back, I ended up coming across a lake, which I knew I never passed by before. Then when I climbed a rock to try to get my bearings, I ended up disturbing a bunch of lions and had to run away from them. At least until I fell into some sort of bug colony, which was captured by some sort of ant."
"I think I get the picture," I said, holding a hand up to stop the adventurer, unable to keep a chuckle from escaping my body, which had the fortunate side effect of dampening the anger that I had been holding on to. "Well, we're not headed back to Oldford just yet, but I have a group nearby that you can travel with for the day. We should be back in Oldford later on tonight."
"That would be perfect,"
the woman exclaimed, relief crossing her features.
"My name is Edenea, by the way."
"I'm Lyrian," I replied, before offering her the loot from the beetles that Amaranth and I had killed. I figured with the way her luck had been running, she could definitely use something to show for her efforts. Shifting away from the battle scene, I turned back towards the southwest, relying on my party sense to guide me in the direction of my group, and by extension the rest of the guild as they slowly made their way towards the tower. The meeting with Stanton earlier this morning had taken up well over an hour before we all decided to take a break for the day and give ourselves a chance to digest everything that he had revealed to us. That, and to give Lazarus and his friends the time that they needed to yell at the agent in private, since none of them were thrilled at the prospect of spending the next 6 months away from Iberia, nor happy with just how much he had hidden from them. "Something that I can't help but sympathize with," I thought, staring at the ground as I walked, feeling the distant anger and frustration still raging deep in the core of my being. Stanton's revelation had gone far to shatter any sense of control and understanding that I'd begun to feel in handling him or understanding Iberian politics, causing me to berate myself for my naivete. Everything had seemed so much simpler this morning when I'd woken up having to only worry about finishing the next longhouse and hoping that Leandra logged back in. Now, after Stanton's revelation, I couldn't help but look at everyone in Aldford suspiciously, wondering if they could be a double agent or there on behalf of one of Iberia's noble houses. What would I do if it turned out that Sheila, Jenkins, or Ritt turned out to be a spy, or any of the other founding settlers? Finding out that there was a spy within the town would destroy morale permanently, if not turn everyone on one another. Even the barest rumor could result in a witch hunt that could end up hurting, if not killing, someone who could otherwise be innocent. And that didn't even include the bandits that we'd killed several days ago. It was entirely possible that they may try to make their way back up towards Aldford for a shot at revenge. In addition, if one of the other houses did send an agent in one of the caravans that had been destroyed by the bandits, they could very well assume that it was us that had killed them and decide to retaliate somehow. God, I hate politics! I scowled before shifting my attention towards my character sheet in hopes of distracting myself, remembering that I gained a level after the fight with the Beatles. Scanning through it to take note of any changes, I then mentally added my 5 free attribute points to agility, instantly feeling my body become ever so slightly more limber. Lyrian Rassler. Level 14 Spellsword. Statistics. HP. 792 out of 792, Stamina 720 out of 720, Mana 790 out of 790. Experience to next level, 43 out of 29,400. Attributes, Strength 54 out of 68, Agility 49 out of 65, Constitution 43 out of 44, Intelligence 51, Willpower 19. Skills, Magic, Evocation, level 13, 96%. Alteration, level 13, 98%. Conjuration, level 13, 85%. Abjuration, level 13, 72%. Weapons. Unarmed combat, level 14, 38%. Swords, level 14, 2%. Axes, level 11, 35%. Daggers, level 12, 73%. Other. Stealth, level 11, 12%. Wordplay, level 12, 31%. Perception, level 13, 85%. I'm gonna have to start specializing soon. I realized as I looked at my character sheet and noticed that my 3 main attributes, strength, agility, and intelligence, were all reasonably balanced with regards to one another. I had done my best to try and keep them that way, at least for these early levels in the game. But with my next class skill point available to me at level 15, I had to start thinking a bit more of how I was going to develop my playstyle. I knew that no matter what, all 3 attributes would be important to me, but it was likely in my best interest to focus on one over the other. But with that being said, I had no idea which route appealed to me the most. Going a strength route would allow me to hit harder and wear heavier armor, but the trade-off would have me sacrificing mobility. In comparison, going an agility route would raise my mobility to almost impossible to match levels, but would limit my raw damage output. Then there was also the option of going into an almost pure caster build and focusing on intelligence like the one Mazdar had shown. If I had a large enough mana pool, I could dump spells into people from near point-blank range and not have to worry as much about keeping up with them physically. At least until I ran out of mana, I told myself grimly, remembering the nature of my ether warping and unsure if I'd ever find a way to cure it. As useful as it would be to have a larger mana pool, if only for my own peace of mind. Not being able to regenerate it naturally or being at risk of dying if I ever ran out didn't make that path as appealing to me. I let my thoughts wander for a while as Amaranth, Edenea, and I walked slowly across the plains in silence, my mind bouncing between what my future playstyle could be and going over the one point that had largely been forgotten during the meeting with Stanton. In her letter to Aldwyn, Amelia had effectively divested herself from Aldford and given up any claim to the settlement, essentially recognizing the town as an independent entity, which was something that we had all wanted, but something that also had the side effect of withdrawing whatever protection her house had been able to offer. Before learning that there could be potential spies in our midst and other houses moving against us, I wouldn't have even second-guessed her absolving Aldford of its debt and accepted it at face value. But knowing what I knew now, I wasn't all that confident anymore. With my cynicism and paranoia working in overdrive, I couldn't help but wonder if there was more going on behind the scenes than she was willing to tell us. "You have no frame of reference for any of this, Marcus," an inner voice tried to tell me. "It's not like you took Espionage 101 back when you were still in school. That's probably why the Queen assigned Stanton to us, likely to give us the basic grounding in what to look for and how to react. Which forces us to trust a professional liar and killer," I mentally countered, making a note to myself to pick up some real-world material about the spy trade and medieval politics the next time I logged off. I had no idea if anything I read would even come close to applying to our current situation, but knowing myself, I'd feel better if my mind was occupied. Shaking my head to pull myself out of my reverie, I was surprised to find that I'd unconsciously pulled up my quest log, specifically the portion of it pertaining to the espionage quest that I'd become all too familiar with in seeing over the last few days. Once again, it hovered in my vision, full of information that was questionably useful at best and downright aggravating at worst. Statecraft, deception and veracity. After a particularly tense confrontation, Lord Stanton has revealed himself to be a House Daenerys agent, a spy directly in the employ of Queen Amelia. Proving his credentials with a letter from his mistress, the agent then went on to warn you that the other houses have taken notice of Altford, and either already have or are looking to insert their own agents into the town. Writing off his past actions and Lazarus's warning as an attempt to force any other agents to reveal themselves, Lord Stanton then went on to explain what he had learned of any other house agents, mentioning that he has already detected and eliminated one during the bandit raid, but that the potential existed for there to be others hiding in Altford. Under orders from the Queen, Lord Stanton has been assigned to train those in Altford in the arts of espionage and subterfuge, while ensuring that Altford remains independent and free from any of the Iberian noble house's control. You aren't sure what sort of politics is being played behind the scenes, or if you can truly trust Lord Stanton and Queen Amelia, but for now, they appear to be on your side. Or are they? Discover any agents in Altford, 0/?. Pass Stanton's training, 0/?. Difficulty, very hard. Reward, unknown. Penalty for failure, unknown. I was fairly confident that I was going to develop an ulcer the further I progressed down this espionage quest chain. If not in-game, then certainly back in reality. I had no idea what Stanton's training would entail, or if I would be able to stomach what was bound to be a morally questionable experience. But for the sake of Altford, I knew I had to try. Especially if I was serious in trying to follow through on my idea of founding an adventurer-led nation out here in the region. If I didn't get a good grip on how to play the political game now, while I still could, I was more than likely going to regret it later. "Is that them?" Edna's voice had me looking up from the ground I'd fixated on, and spotting her hand pointing towards a slow-moving shape in the distance. "That's them," I confirmed, following the woman's hand and squinting, seeing the blurry shape resolve itself into a long flatbed wagon being pulled by a team of horses, with several other people walking alongside it.
"Phew! You certainly have a lot of people in your guild,"
Edna replied with a note of surprise as we picked up our pace now that our goal was in sight. "And always looking for more," I told the adventurer in what I hoped was a good-natured tone. "Feel free to mingle about today and see if you're interested in joining. We have a pretty good group so far."
"I may do that,"
Edna said, thinking thoughtfully to herself, as we covered the final distance between us and the guild, Constantine's waving hand signaling me from his standing position on top of the wagon. Letting the now rescued adventurer move away from me as she went to join Cyril's group walking alongside the wagon, I shifted my approach towards Constantine, seeing the rogue take a seat at the edge of the flatbed, his feet hanging over the side.
"Feeling better now that you managed to blow off some steam?"
Constantine asked me by way of greeting, stroking Amaranth as the big cat rushed past me and leaped onto the wagon, lying down beside the rogue and letting his paws hang off the edge.
"So you picked up a stray, too."
"She was lost on the plains for the last couple days," I replied, answering Constantine's second question first while angling myself to keep pace with the wagon as it continued its steady trek eastward. "As for your first question, no, not really."
"Can't say I blame you,"
Constantine said sympathetically while glancing over at Edenea, who had since struck up a conversation with Cyril.
"Also,
That's not bad for surviving out here alone. I shrugged at my friend while giving him a serious look. You ever get that feeling where you're over your head and just trying to stay afloat?
Pretty much ever since I fell out of my mother,
Constantine answered crudely, despite matching my stare. But that's a natural state for me. The moment I feel that I finally get something, I'm instantly bored and start screwing around looking for something else to do. I grunted back at the rogue, knowing all too well what Constantine meant. Having grown up with him, being bored often precluded an event that almost always ended up getting him or the both of us in trouble.
I take you mean more about everything that Stanton dumped on us today?
Constantine went on to ask. That's a big part of it, I replied, despite shaking my head at the question. Leandra hasn't come back yet either.
He's only half a day late, Constantine told me in an understanding tone. And like you said, he has a hell of a long way to wind back the clock.
Assuming they were able to wind it back at all, I countered, remembering what the man had told me. His odds of living weren't the best.
As opposed to the 100% chance nearly everyone else has to die?
Constantine shot back with a raised eyebrow.
Don't borrow any more stress than you need to, Lear. Sure, Leandra may be late in coming back, but there could be 10,001 reasons explaining that, all of which still leave him alive.
You're right, I said with a sigh, before continuing to walk along for a while in silence. This wasn't quite how I expected the day to unfold today, though.
Well, you should start adjusting your expectations then, Lear,
Constantine exclaimed, waving a hand at our surroundings.
We're living in a fantasy world now. Who's to say what will come our way next? Maybe Alduin is really an ancient dragon in disguise,
he said dramatically.
Or that tomorrow one of the moons will fall from the sky, or that Amaranthir will suddenly sprout wings and be able to fly.
Wings would be a pain to clean,
Amaranth grumbled to me as he let out a snort.
I would prefer to be faster, if nothing else.
I couldn't help but laugh at my familiar serious tone of voice while understanding what Constantine was getting at. Amaranth says he'd prefer to have super speed over wings.
Smart,
the rogue agreed, moving to scratch the cat's back.
Flying's overrated.
I understand what you're getting at, though, I told Constantine. We shouldn't expect things to stay the same all the time, and to know that the game will throw us curveballs from time to time.
Exactly, he acknowledged. Could be a blessing that we find out this way from Stanton now, instead of later. I figure with all the adventurers we're looking to recruit, being a little cutthroat and manipulative may be the difference between getting our way and getting steamrolled.
I had a similar thought earlier, I admitted. I can't help but cringe at what Stanton's training's gonna be like, though. I'm not expecting it to be all roses and sunshine.
I don't either, Lyrian,
Constantine agreed while holding up a hand.
But there's one important thing to note.
Oh? I asked, suddenly curious. What's that?
I'm not bored anymore.
Chapter 25.
Great job, everyone! I called out while looking over all the exhausted and sweaty guild members before me, each and every person having spent the last 4 hours helping load the jagged 15-foot-long piece of dark metal onto the flatbed wagon.
Take a few minutes to rest up and we'll start the trek back.
It had been a long and laborious process as we extricated the broken length of metal from inside the fallen tower, with more than a few mishaps and one outright near catastrophe marking our day. But at long last, our first recovered chunk of metal was finally secured to the wagon and ready to be taken back to Aldford, where I was sure we would no doubt face an entirely new set of challenges in unloading it. At the moment, though, that was a problem for the future, and one I would be happy to tackle solving now that I had a way to smelt the metal.
Well,
Helix greeted me with a weary breath.
That was both harder, yet easier than I was expecting.
And as easy as it'll ever be,
Freya added tiredly as both she and Thorn moved to join us. The other pieces are going to be even worse to recover. They're buried too far into the ground to be easily pulled out. We'll have to come back with the team and spend a day or two just digging.
I'm not looking forward to it either, the dark-skinned dwarf added. But let's leave problems like that far off into the future. We can worry about them later. We still need to get ourselves back to Aldford first.
"That we do," I said, unable to disagree with Thorne's sentiment. "Hopefully we can stretch this metal long enough so we won't need to make a second trip anytime soon. It's going to be one hell of a learning curve before any of us are able to craft things with it reliably, though."
"We shall see,"
Helix replied with a shrug of his large shoulders, while inclining his head towards the solid hunk of metal sitting on the wagon.
"We certainly have plenty to practice with."
First nodding at the lizard man, I then turned my attention towards the tower, seeing the burnt-out shell of what was once its roof littering the ground before it. The fire that I'd set, what seemed like a lifetime ago, had done a number on the fallen tower, devouring all the wood that had once been present in the structure, as well as crushing all of the goblin huts below it when it had fallen free. "Might as well get moving," I said after a moment, my eyes landing on the blackened remains of the tiles that were once the roof of the tower. "Hopefully we can be back before it gets too dark."
"And hopefully we don't get stuck,"
Freya added, her eyes glancing down nervously at the wagon's wheels.
"This metal sure weighs a lot."
"Here's to hoping," I agreed, motioning towards the front of the wagon. "I'll check on the horses and make sure they're ready to go. Might as well start getting the rest of the guild ready to move in the meantime."
"I'll be sure to tell them that the sooner we get back, the sooner they can eat a hot meal and go to bed,"
Helix replied with a chuckle.
"They may just end up pulling the wagon themselves in hopes of getting back faster."
Parting with a laugh, the four of us then split up, each of us heading off to take care of our last-minute tasks, before we set off back on our journey to Aldford. By some miracle, our combined efforts managed to get everyone to leave within the next 15 minutes, all the newer Virtus members suddenly moving with renewed purpose, no doubt motivated by Helix's promise of food and sleep when they returned to the town. Before long, we'd left the tower behind, taking a narrow route through the forest that we had discovered a handful of weeks earlier. No doubt cleared out by the goblins that had once inhabited the fallen tower to move their own wagons in and out of the forest. It was slow and careful going at best, given the oversized length of the wagon and the proximity of the trees, but we managed to press through the woods gradually without getting stuck.
"I can see the plains up ahead,"
Thorne called back to me from his position driving the wagon.
"We should be able to make great time once we get out in the open."
"Great,"
I replied from just behind the dwarf, sitting in a loose circle with Freya, Caius, and Halcyon, the four of us shamelessly enjoying the perks of our rank within the guild and catching a ride on the wagon, while everyone else was forced to walk alongside it.
"We're making pretty good time, all things considered,"
Caius said, leaning back in his seated position, his skull-bone staff sitting across his lap.
"I was worried that we might get stuck on..."
Caius paused halfway through his sentence, a frown coming over his face as he looked out towards the forest, a worried expression coming over his face.
"I hear something," he said, his eyes suddenly widening. "Shit, it's a lot of somethings."
"What?"
Thorne gasped from ahead of us, his head whipping around to look behind him.
"Where?"
I asked, pushing myself up to my feet and looking out into the woods, realizing that Caius was referring to his blood sensibility, which allowed him to hear the heartbeat of anything that carried blood in its veins within a certain range.
"Straight ahead to either side of us,"
he replied, shaking his head as he followed my lead and stood up.
"An ambush?"
Freya asked as she readied herself to stand up.
"Don't all move at once,"
Halcyon exclaimed in a nervous tone, catching Freya by the arm before she could stand up.
"If someone's watching us, you're going to spook them."
"What do we do then?"
Caius asked, belatedly turning the quick ascent to his feet into a stretch.
An arrow flying through the brush cut off my reply as it suddenly slammed into my shoulder, filling my world with a burst of pain and causing me to fall down onto my knee in shock.
"Oh, fucking hell!"
Freya spat as she scrambled over towards me, her voice then splitting the air.
"Ambush!"
Freya's shout barely had time to register in everyone's mind before the sounds of screaming voices and rushing bodies began to echo from the forest ahead of us. Looking up in the direction of the noise, I saw the world shimmer as Halcyon threw up a wall of force before us, catching a handful of follow-up arrows before they could fall upon us.
"Shit!"
Thorne yelped, flinching from the onslaught of arrows that bounced off Halcyon's shield, the mage thankfully having the foresight to include him within its protection.
"Lyrian, are you okay?"
Freya asked as both she and Caius turned to look at the arrow sticking out of me.
"I'll be fine,"
I replied, reaching up to pull the arrow free of my shoulder, wincing as I did so.
"A little help, Caius?"
On it, Kaia said, already moving before I could even finish the question, his hand lightly touching my shoulder and causing the wound to vanish. Nodding at Kaia in thanks, I motioned for us to get off the exposed wagon, while simultaneously sending a message to Amaranth, the cat having gone scouting with Sierra and Constantine. We're under attack!
We know. They just revealed themselves.
My familiar replied somewhat distractedly.
We are moving to flank them now. Many are rushing towards the path. Be wary.
Damn, we have incoming,
I said as Freya, Caius, and I leapt off the wagon, Halcyon choosing to remain on top to protect Thorn and the horses pulling the wagon. If either of the two large draft animals pulling the wagon went down, getting the wagon back to Oldford was going to be next to impossible. Assuming, of course, that any of us survived this surprise attack at all. Putting aside the question of who would be attacking us for the moment, I glanced around my surroundings, looking to see how the other guild members had reacted to the sudden interruption of our journey back home, half expecting my eyes to land on several clusters of shell-shocked adventurers staring numbly into the forest. But instead of an array of frozen or panicked statues, I saw that they had all reflexively fallen into their assigned groups, each of them complete with a glowing shield of force shimmering around them, as they rushed forward towards the head of the wagon, two of the groups rushing forward on the side opposite from us, with the other moving directly towards us. A wave of pride and relief flowed through me as I realized that all the new recruits had taken our lessons over the last week to heart, and hadn't let panic overcome them. Spotting Alistair's familiar face at the head of the group of adventurers rapidly closing in on us, I waved for him to follow us before turning my body and leading the way, shouting as I ran.
Raiders attacking from the woods on either side!
I bellowed as I rushed towards the front of the wagon, seeing dozens of people burst free from the heavy brush ahead of us, rushing onto the path, some of them visibly stumbling as branches and thick plants impeded their progress. I idly wondered if it was my movements that had forced the attackers to spring their attack early, or if Amaranth and the others had contributed in spooking them, but whatever the case was, it was readily apparent to me that we had only partially fallen into their ambush. With every second that passed, more and more attackers steadily streamed out of the forest ahead of us, clearly caught out of position from where they had planned to launch their attack. Up to us to make the most of a lucky break, I thought, the wound in my shoulder already a memory as my feet continued to move forward, a plan forming in my head. We're still a long way from being in control of this fight. The first rule that I had learned when surprised by a close ambush was to push past the instinct to hide and take cover, especially against one that had gone off half-cocked like this one. Staying put gave away the initiative, giving the enemy the opportunity to do whatever it was that they wanted. No, the best way to survive an attack like this was to charge straight into it, taking away the time for the enemy to adjust and take control of the encounter. Which is exactly what I planned to do.
Charge them!
My voice rang out into the forest around us as I rushed past the now panicking horses at the front of the wagon.
Don't let them form up! Ranged attackers, let them have it!
You heard the man!
Helix shouted, a heartbeat behind mine, his large, scaly form visible as he and the rest of the Thunder Lizards rounded the other side of the wagon, moving to fall in on my right.
Melee in the front ranks!
A roar of defiance rose up into the air as we all surged forward towards the raiders, the thunderous clap of spells beginning to ring out as mages on both sides began to unleash their arsenal from afar, before the clash of melee forced them to switch to more precise and targeted spells. Despite the planning and tactics the attackers had shown, I couldn't help but notice that the leading edge of their ranks appeared to be caught off guard by our sudden rush into combat, their movements faltering for a moment as some of their members took a step back, watching us as we closed the distance in surprise. Whoever these adventurers were, it seemed that they lacked the edge that only hard training and experience could provide. Who are these people? The thought couldn't help but cross my mind as I looked at the raiders ahead of me, seeing that some were covered in nothing better than rags, while others were clad in finely crafted leather armor. Was there another group of banded adventurers this way that we missed, or have they made it back this way already? Time quickly ran out from my internal questions as we finally slammed into the raiders, the loud crash of bodies and metal overwhelming the earlier sounds of magic. A half-orc's face briefly filled my vision as the battle began, his expression shifting from angry defiance to horror as I battled the point of his sword away from me and plunged Razor into his unarmored chest. Without even hesitating, I continued forward with my charge, shouldering him hard in the chest and knocking him backward off his feet, aided by his desperate efforts to pull himself off my blade. Flailing wildly, the half-orc crashed into a companion behind him, taking the pair of them down to the ground in a tangle of limbs.
Without even a second's hesitation, Freya's spear shot out from beside me, reaching to stab the unlucky adventurer in the throat with her spear before snapping back to embed itself in the stomach of the man before her. Stepping forward, I moved to finish what I'd started, thrusting my blade into the eye of the half-orc I'd wounded earlier, and then immediately delivering a wicked slash to an attacker on my left, his attention keenly focused on Alistair, who had taken up position beside me. Caught completely unaware, Razor sliced a long gash under the man's arm, causing him to flinch in pain and glance towards me, inadvertently giving Alistair the opportunity to bury his axe directly into the side of his head, sending him falling lifelessly to the ground. It was hard for many to understand at first, but fighting in a line of battle like this was not a clean or honorable affair. The fights didn't unfold like personal duels played out on a grand scale like they did in movies, each attacker only striking at the one before them. A line of battle was in fact pure chaos, a press of bodies so close that there was rarely enough room to swing your weapon, let alone have a clear and fair angle at a single opponent. Attacks could seemingly come from any direction at any time, and more often than not, any fatal wounds that landed weren't delivered by the person before you, but from the person on either side of them, taking advantage of an opening that you had no chance of defending against, let alone seeing. That was the reason why I'd gone through such pains in making sure everyone, my friends, the new guild members, and even myself, had practiced intently in fighting together. Survival in a close battle such as this depended on having those beside you watching your guard, and you watching theirs. Catching a blow that was meant for your partner on the left meant that she was able to land a thrust of her own on another opponent, which then in turn created an opening for someone else, the action endlessly repeating up and down the entire line. Consequently, a single person falling out of line could result in several others taking injuries or falling themselves, as several attacks of opportunities played themselves out from the momentary lapse, forcing the line to readjust itself in a hurry. It was this hard practice skill, combined with our better equipment, that allowed myself and the rest of Virtus around me to carve through the first few rows of raiders like they were nothing, their numbers only serving to get in their way as they scrambled to meet our assault, more than a few latecomers still trying to force themselves out of the heavy foliage that bordered the forest path. Gah! I screamed in exertion as I chopped Razor into the shoulder of a poorly armored bandit, feeling his rusty sword grate harmlessly against my chest, the dull blade unable to damage the links that made up the armor. Ignoring the man's pained scream as I pulled my weapon free, I shoved him hard away from me and saw him vanish in the press of bodies behind him as yet another adventurer wearing a set of rags that could barely be called clothes, let alone armor, practically threw himself onto my sword in a rush to attack me. What the hell is with all these unarmored bandits? I thought as I pulled Razor free from my overeager attacker's gut and delivered a killing slash across his throat, sparing a moment to glance around the press of people. Where are all the ones I saw wearing armor earlier? Taking in my small portion of the line in an instant, I felt my heart leap as I realized that I lost sight of the overall battle, and that in the chaos of fighting, the center of our line, driven forward by the thunder lizards, Freya and myself, had pushed itself too far forward. To my left, I saw Alistair and the rest of his group struggling to keep pace with their attackers, the majority of whom appeared to be the armored bandits I'd seen earlier. Shit! I breathed, immediately recognizing what the raiders had suckered us into doing. Pull back! They're stacking the— Look out! Amaranth's mental shout tore through my mind at the same moment that four large balls of fire swept out from the woods on either side of us. Moving faster than anyone could react, the fireballs streaked through the air directly towards us, burning effortlessly through the low-hanging branches before detonating in a fiery explosion all around us. Throwing my hands in front of my face in reflex, I felt my feet leave the ground as I was thrown backward from the blast, briefly catching a glimpse between my fingers that one of the fireballs had been far enough off target to land directly in the heart of the attackers in front of us. Spinning through the air, I barely had enough time to process the searing pain that shot through my body before crashing back down onto the ground in a heap, a heavy weight landing on top of me just as something hard hit me directly in the forehead. Ugh! I reflexively tried to coil away from the pain, but found myself unable to move, my head spinning wildly as a trio of alerts flashed urgently in my vision, sending cruel sparks of pain into my rattled brain. Unknown's Fireball 2 hits you for 238 points of fire damage. Unknown's Fireball 2 hits you for 112 points of fire damage. Unknown's Fireball 2 hits you for 87 points of fire damage. Freya hits you for 45 points of damage.
Shaking my head to dismiss the prompt, my eyes snapped open, only to find Freya lying directly on top of me, her free hand clutching the side of her helmeted head as she grunted in pain, a long mark of blood on the edge of her helmet making it readily evident to what had hit me in the head.
Freya!
I managed to gasp as I felt something wet drip across my face.
Shit, what?
Freya began to say, her eyes snapping open, widening as she saw my face and began scrambling to get off me.
Oh, damn, I'm sorry, Lyrian.
It's fine,
I replied, cutting her off as I moved to force myself up off the ground and tried to piece together what had just happened, feeling my head begin to spin.
We need to move.
Forcing myself through the pain as I sat up, I turned my head to scan the battlefield, finding that we had been far from the only ones to be affected by the blast. Nearly everyone, be it Virtus member or raider, had been staggered or knocked off their feet from the quartet of fireballs that had streamed from the forest around us, with the raiders seemingly having taken the worst of the damage due to the one rogue fireball that had landed in the heart of their formation. Those who still stood amongst the raiders hesitantly glanced into the forest, their expressions a mixture of both worry and anger, while the stunned Virtus Guild members struggled to pick themselves up off the ground and buy themselves some measure of space during the brief pause in battle.
Fuck! Helix and Zethus just vanished from party sense!
Freya told me just as I finished my scan around the battlefield, having already pushed herself up into a standing position.
They must have caught the fireballs point blank!
Damn, I cursed, while mentally reaching out to check on my groupmates, then flinching as I realized that both Sierra's and Constantine's presence was much further away than it had been a few seconds earlier. Whatever they had run into in the forest had been more than they could manage, and they had both just respawned back in Oldford.
Sierra and Constantine, too.
What the fuck is going on?
Freya snapped as she offered me a hand to get me back up on my feet.
I thought we cleared out all the bandits in the area.
So did I,
wheezed as I accepted her hand and allowed her to pull me up, sending a message to Amaranth as I rose.
Hey, what's happening? Are you okay?
I killed one of them and wounded the other.
Amaranth's mental voice was pained and rushed as he spoke.
I am coming to rejoin you. I require help.
Who did you kill? What happened to Constantine and Sierra?
I asked my familiar, completely unaware of just what he was talking about, but not receiving a reply.
Amaranth is coming,
I told Freya urgently while taking a moment to cast lesser shielding on myself now that I had the opportunity.
He said that he needs help, and he's not replying to me. We're about to have our own problems here, Lear,
Freya said, motioning towards the raiders, who had steadily managed to pick themselves up off the ground during our interlude.
We need to form up and regroup back at the wagon.
A loud feline roar intermixed with feral barking cut off the remainder of Freya's statement, as Amaranth leaped out from the forest in a spray of leaves and broken branches, a large translucent red wolf soaring through the air a heartbeat behind him. Moving faster than the cat could react after landing, the wolf leaped onto Amaranth and knocked him onto his back. Straddling the cat, the wolf savagely bit at my familiar, managing to land several bites before a vicious kick sent the ghost-like creature flying off him, the creature's body shifting eerily as it landed on all fours without any apparent effort.
Are you okay?
I called out to Amaranth, moving to rush forward towards the creature that threatened my familiar, only to have it bound away from me at a blinding pace, a single tag identifying it in my vision. What the hell is that? Malevolent wolf spirit. Level 17.
I don't know,
Amaranth replied in a pained voice as he forced himself up onto all four paws, revealing a patchwork of bloody and burned fur across his body, some of it being obviously someone or something else's, but a generous portion belonging to the cat himself.
But it leaped upon Constantine before I could react, and moves unnaturally, like no creature I've ever seen.
Would you look at that?
A familiar voice called out from across the battlefield, interrupting our conversation as a group of armored men dressed in heavy leathers walked out of the woods, opposite to the one that my familiar and the spectral wolf had just emerged from.
Seems that they like playing with one another.
The spirit wolf gave a snort of derision at the statement, giving Amaranth a hungry look, before turning and trotting over to join the speaking man's side, its ghostly appearance making it hard for the eye to follow. Tearing my attention away from the strange creature, I felt my blood go cold with anger as I recognized who the speaking man was, the large stag skull on his head doing little to disguise his identity. It had been weeks since any of us had seen him last. Not since everything had happened with Graves.
We had just all assumed, hoped, that he had cut his losses and went elsewhere. Clearly, we were wrong. Glaring at the man, I tried to force down the rage that erupted in my chest, his name tearing itself out of my throat like a curse.
Carver!
Chapter 26. Silence fell over the battlefield as the name floated through the air, everyone staring numbly at the half-orc. Taking in his new appearance, the man having long since shed the plain leather armor that we had all last seen him in, replacing it with a nightmarish collection of fur and hide. Dressed from head to toe in a patchwork of blood-soaked leathers and animal fur, Carver's armor sent involuntary shivers down my spine as I spotted bits and pieces of flesh still clinging to the individual pieces that comprised it. The longer I stared at the armor, the more it appeared to be sewn together by a madman, with barely a care to appearance, unless one actively wanted to project fear and the capacity for violence, which, knowing Carver, he most definitely did. Completing the rest of his disturbing appearance was a cruel-looking short spear bearing a serrated edge and a heavy wooden shield covered in similar bloody hides as his armor, the item serving only to enhance his already vicious image.
Him!
Amaranth hissed audibly from my side, his ears going flat on his head as he pressed himself to the ground, ready to pounce.
I remember this man from before.
Lirian! Freya!
Carver called out joyfully, his stag-horned helmet dipping towards me in greeting before his eyes shifted ever so slightly to the blonde warrior beside me.
It's been too long since we've last seen one another!
No, Carver, it hasn't.
Freya spat angrily as she whipped her spear into position before her, training its point on the half-orc.
In fact, you should have never come back here.
Goodness, I'll miss you, Freya! Your friend Thorn, too,
Carver replied with a chuckle, his gaze then focusing past us and towards the wagon.
It just isn't the same without you two anymore. You...
What do you want, Carver? I cut the half-orc off, noticing that while the man was talking, all the surviving raiders on the battlefield were regrouping behind him and the other men that he had exited the forest with, prompting me to motion for the rest of the guild to do the same, lest we get caught off guard a second time.
What the hell are you doing here?
Strike to the questions already, Lirian!
Carver asked, shaking his head and making an all-too-familiar clucking sound with his tongue, his eyes shifting to watch the surviving members of Virtus carefully as they formed up around me.
No time to stop and catch up with an old friend before diving straight into business. Ooh, seems to me like plenty's changed with you. You look rough.
You aren't our friend,
Freya spat from beside me.
And we don't have any business together, Carver.
I ground out through clenched teeth, feeling a hand touch my back and send a brief wave of healing energy through me, before Alistair appeared in the corner of my eye and doing the same for Amaranth. In the distance I could hear the nervous whinny of the horses pulling the wagon, along with the slow clop of their hooves as they drew closer. No doubt Thorn was concerned that more raiders could be prowling through the forest, attempting to circle us, and had decided to bring the vehicle closer to us.
As wounding as your words are, they aren't entirely true, you see. At least not anymore,
the half-orc replied, his voice taking on a scolding tone as he jabbed his spear in my direction.
I know we had a rather harsh parting the last time we saw one another, but I was willing to let bygones be bygones, assuming you all minded your own business. We all got swept up into Graves' crazy scheme, after all, and we're just trying to find a way to survive. But then, several days ago, I get word that not only have you lot have been sticking your noses into places they don't belong,
Carver continued, his expression hardening as he spoke.
But that you've managed to destroy one of my best producing groups, Root and Branch.
There was a pause in the air as we absorbed what Carver had just said, several of the newer guild recruits calling out as they put the man's statement together.
The Grey Devils,
Freya's scorn-filled voice split the air.
They were yours?
They are mine,
Carver corrected, his hand waving towards several of the unarmored adventurers behind him, who were now glaring at us with undisguised hatred.
You see, the little stunt you pulled, destroying their hideout and killing the lot, split them between Iberia and Coldscar, depending on where they last bound themselves, which you can imagine is more than a little bit inconvenient.
I can't say that breaks my heart all that much, I said, allowing my eyes to slide off Carver and towards the unarmored adventurers, my mind trying to make sense of the half-orc's admission and piecing it into what we had just learned from Stanton a few hours earlier. If Carver was running the bandits, does that mean that there isn't any connection with the other house agents? I asked myself. He isn't the